This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Wong Xiaoning and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday the 7th of January. And Noel, it's nice to have you in studio with us once again. How does it feel to be back?
Well, indeed, it's like exercising an old muscle, like riding a bike, I suppose. But it takes time.
But you never forget, right?
I don't know about that because it's been about 7 years since I've been on air live. So it's quite a task to get back into the steam.
I'm sure you'll get your rhythm
very
quickly.
We have full confidence in you, Noel.
Well, both of you, yes, I'm sure.
How are you both this morning, though?
Quite good, actually. It's a nice Tuesday morning. There are a lot more cars on the road. That kind of surprised me. Yesterday was super quiet.
Yeah, I think people are starting to come back from whatever holiday they've been on. Even the office is starting to get more populated because in the first couple of weeks, a couple of days of the year, it was still really, really empty.
I think a lot of parents were taking time off to get their kids to school for the Thursday and Friday, but by now, you know, your kid is probably settled in and then you're back to the office.
Yeah, you know, I think in the weekends the malls were quite crowded. People were doing their shopping. I think people are just coming back in full steam from their holidays to, to get back into the groove.
Yeah, so I live in KL within a short jump of a lot of the malls, and I've just been walking everywhere because I can't park.
That's because there's only 2 weekends to Chinese New Year, guys. Do you realize it? This year is a super early Chinese New Year. And according to Keith Kam, our newsreader, he found out that it's a 13-month Chinese New Year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's an extra month, and hence that's why Chinese New Year starts so early in January versus normally the February.
Yes, I've heard of this. It's something like when there's a duplicate 8th month or
something.
Yeah,
like a leap year or something. But hey, there's only more 2 weekends to shopping. Hence, that's why the malls will get even more crowded.
Yeah, sort of getting over and be done with it, right? And the thing is then, what about warm weather? Are we going to get warmer weather in January and very soon before Chinese New Year?
Well, Chinese New Year is like blazing hot normally.
Usually. But you never know now because sometimes climate change and everything, because we do get strange weather patterns. The weather patterns aren't as predictable as they used to be. But you know what is predictable? We are going to be talking about lots of interesting things during this next 6 o'clock hour. So what do we have on the agenda?
So, well, on my part, what can you learn from being asked to resign? And I picked the story from Fast Company. I guess it's in response to Masli Malik, who was terminated, resigned. So he's. So what can you learn? I think it's from both sides, right? The employee side, the employer side, and also from bystanders who are, who have to witness this whole resignation, termination.
And I'll be asking you whether you ever played hide and seek as a kid. Now we have a global sophisticated version here and we're going to talk about that later.
All right. And remember, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're going to be taking a look at mental health and perhaps 5 ways you can improve your mental health in 2020. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was 1979 by Smashing Pumpkins. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Xiaoning and Noel. Now, 2020, new start, new you. For a lot of people, I think mental health is definitely going to be something that will be somewhere on the radar, at least at this year, because fortunately, we are becoming a lot more aware of mental health issues as the years go by and how they can be triggered by sometimes work stress, family stress, all the different kinds of stress in your life. And CNN has an article this morning, 5 ways to improve your mental health in 2020. Quite a good article. I mean, it's got some... The solutions are that it gives are it's really as expected, but it's good to reinforce these solutions because these are the kinds of things that as the days go by, as work starts to really kick in, you forget.
So mental health is a cause that BFM is picking this year to champion. So I think we expect more interviews that's going to be coming up. The thing about mental health is really the outcome of our autonomous nervous system, right? It's how we react to stress and if our brain gets constantly triggered by external or even internal events that's happening in our minds, it causes a lot of havoc in the body. And so for me, I think my mental health, how I really try to protect myself, I think through mindfulness, practices, meditation. Mm-hmm. I also go for some retreats at least twice or 3 times a year. These are Buddhist retreats.
Well, Noelle, you take a very philosophical approach to stress. Unfortunately, stress is invisible, right? And sometimes you don't even know it's happening to your body, the negative impacts. I think for me, I realize that usually something is wrong when I can't sleep. That's one way. And I get a little bit more agitated than I would. And I think those are the signs. The problem is everybody has different signs. And some people don't even exhibit any signs till it gets too bad. And then they have a form of a breakdown.
Yeah, and that's also the thing, right? When you are, say, working in a team, sometimes you don't realize that other people may also be stressed because everyone wants to put on a front. Everyone wants to say, oh, you know, I'm doing just fine. I can cope. I can handle everything you throw at me. But sometimes exhibiting that form of vulnerability can actually, you know, make other people feel more comfortable about the fact that they're stressed, right?
Yeah, and I think there's also no shame in admitting it, right? Mm. Why should there be? If you're feeling under the weather, you don't feel yourself, I think it's fine to actually tell somebody. I mean, otherwise, how would other people know?
Yeah, these days, I think officers are becoming more open to conversations about mental health. And because stress is just so unpredictable, right? So needing to take care of the mind before you slip through this, what they call the exhaustion funnel. And that usually starts when you start to display a lot of negativity, and then it leads on to depression. So, I mean, these things have been documented and it's quite scientific to some extent. So really, I think mental health, I think this year we're really going to see more cases. In fact, suicide rates, for example, has been increasing. Where my sister work, I'm not going to mention the names, there has been a few people who have committed suicide, and it's quite depressing when you think about it.
Yeah, that's a real shame, very tragic. Because and also, you know, you have to take into account things like, I remember reading one of the National Health and Morbidity Surveys, I think it was 2017, that showed shocking numbers of students also exhibiting signs of high stress, some of them exhibiting anxiety, depression, and it just goes to show that we really start seeing these stress patterns appearing even when we're very young and when our children are in schools. And if we don't, you know, show them that it's okay to actually express themselves, what the problem is that they can then feel very isolated.
Yeah.
And when you isolate yourself, then it just gets worse because it becomes a really vicious cycle in your own head, right?
And and even in our culture, it's about sucking up and just dealing with it. But I think now it's about being more vulnerable. Accepting your vulnerability is one aspect to, you know, taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I think the identifying of the stress or should happen not only just in the home, but also in the office. I think the office can play a role. And also schools, especially if you're talking about the higher suicide rates among kids. But this article, I think, has some very practical tips. I mean, just 5 points, right, to think of before maybe perhaps you kind of overdo it in terms of the stress. And some of them are very true. I mean, whether you have an optimistic nature, whether you're grateful for the things you have. And I think this part is important, to be sociable. So and in that way, your circle of friends is also the way where you know maybe you've gone too far. They can help you and notice, hey, I think you look a little bit too stressed. You know, what's happening? What's happening in your life? Tell me.
Oh, you're quieter recently. Yeah. Is everything okay?
Yes.
You know? But I think you used a phrase there, optimistic nature, which is something that the article also addresses. It's the fact that there is some research to suggest that inherent optimism, actually, you know, it's only 25% genetic. It's not actually that inherent. So you can actually train yourself to be more optimistic, to have a more optimistic outlook, because personalities are malleable, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that, you know, you can't just sit back and be pessimistic and just say, you know, oh, you know, I'm not optimistic, therefore, you know, this, it's just completely out of my reach. Sometimes it just takes, it's small steps that you need to start, that you need to start the journey.
Yeah, so I think optimism is also linked to finding your purpose, you know, having, you know, just showing up for work, you know, there can be a purpose apart from earning a salary.
Which is important.
Yes, of course. But, you know, what is it that you want to bring to the table, right? You know, something you want to express, some views you want to express, or, you know, just, you know, something you want to do, something you want to achieve, even if it's, you know, small steps.
And it could even even be small. It could be, I want to send my kids to school every day. I want to feed my dog every day. These are the small things that can eventually start to turn into bigger purposes. It just means you have to try and find them in your daily lives. But do let us know what you think. What do you think is the best way to improve your mental health? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few messages coming up for you, and then we'll be taking a look at resignations. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was See Fernando by Jenny Lewis, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Xiaoning and Noel. Now, we've had a very high-profile resignation in the past couple of weeks. Education Minister Dr. Mazli Malik has announced that he is stepping down, stepping away from his position, leaving the cabinet post of Education Minister vacant for the time being. And this Fast Company also coincidentally has an article about this exact same subject, you know, what you can learn from being asked to resign. And it's written by the founder of a startup called Goldie Blocks, who was asked by her team to resign midway through what she felt to be a string of successes. And she was very shocked. She didn't resign. But what she did was she asked a lot of questions. And she realized then that there were actually a lot of cracks beneath the surface that she had not realized.
So when you're growing really fast, I think a lot of things will happen, like employees will feel burnout and being pushed to achieve lofty goals. I think that was in the case of Goldie Blocks. And really, some things will happen, right? You either, as an employee, you push back to say, okay, so what's going on? How can I improve? Or it's an opportunity if you leave, and then you either try to reset and try to look at your expectations again. But there are several factors why an employee may be asked to leave. One is competencies, and maybe that can be addressed through some extensive training or training within a certain period of time. And secondly, it could be not being able to work as a team. For some reason or another, team chemistry doesn't work, or some people are just not team players. But thirdly, it's really about not being able to take orders or instructions, basically not being an obedient employee, can also get you fired. And apparently it might be in the case of Encik Mazli Malik, because he, there are a lot of news about why he's resigning and so forth, right? So he may have been terminated for going against or not consulting cabinet's decisions. And in our culture, obedience is quite a big thing.
Well, I think whatever it is, if it happens, I think it's generally a shock to anyone, because most of us would think, hey, everything is hunky-dory, why suddenly I get, kicked out of my job. But from an employee perspective, actually, it's also not fair if the employer never gave me any feedback or never gave me any chance to improve my performance, right? So it's a two-way thing. So I think if you really want to eventually, there's no other way of putting sacking your staff, you also need to make sure that you have tried your best to make sure that the person is up to mark with his job, whether it's because he doesn't take instructions, he doesn't have the required skill sets, all the social skills, all that can have some, you can have some training or discussion. It shouldn't go from hero to zero, immediately shown the door. That's not fair to him either.
No, it isn't. And so this is another thing that we've seen come up more and more. And because we were talking, I remember, a few weeks ago about, how to be a better boss, what kind of resolutions you need to make as CEO of a company, maybe going into 2020. And one of those was making sure your employees feel heard. And this is something that is touched on in this article as well, because when she was asked to resign, Debbie Sterling, who's the Goldie Blocks founder, rather than getting defensive and angry, she surprised even herself by kind of sitting back and saying, okay, why is it that you feel I need to resign? What are the problems that you are experiencing? And she listened to their complaints, and then she took full accountability for what it was they were experiencing. And at the end of the day, they actually managed to work something out. So that's also quite important, I think, going into the new year. But the other thing is also, as a CEO, sometimes you don't have anyone to give you that feedback that you were describing, right? Because there's no one above you to judge your performance.
Well, the board of directors, they should be the ones.
But they're not necessarily involved in the day-to-day, right? So they will not be able to see the nitty-gritty of what's actually happening
they need to check in with the staff, right? What's going on? This is where, board of directors, are they effective or not? But I think as an employer, there's so many things you need to do. First, you need to recruit, right? You really have to make sure there's a fit technically and socially as well. well. And then there's also the orientation, right? Getting that staff really assimilated into the team. I think that's so key.
And also understanding the corporate culture and the brand, what it represents. Mm-hmm. I think some, you know, there's a lot of this discussion about corporate culture, corporate branding. But actually, when most of the time when someone joins the firm, there is so little emphasis on that. There's like no, it's just like lip service. Okay, you read the manual, you read the booklet, and then, okay, you're part of the staff. But it's not really shown in how let's say, one colleague interacts with another. And that's important. There's no explanation. There's no kind of a training booklet. It's kind of assumed that you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that's something that companies shouldn't take for granted.
And we assume that these things we learn in schools, but the truth is we don't learn these things formally in schools, right? And I think in the case of Goldie Blocks, Debbie, I think what happened was she went for personal coaching and there was some mentoring involved. So I think all was good for her.
She also underscores the fact that you should be taking vacations.
I like that part though. That's my favorite bit. That's my favorite bit.
Yeah, because it's stressful, right? And it's the kind of stress that builds over time if you're working constantly. So one of the things she attributes to her success in actually managing the request from her team to resign was the fact that she had just come back from a vacation and she was feeling relaxed and open and de-stressed. So that's one of her pieces of advice. Take vacations.
Yeah, so Lynn, we're only at the beginning of the year, so it's too soon to talk about vacations.
Really? Are you sure about that, Noelle? Maybe we should start taking vacations now. You never know.
We need to clear leave, right?
Oh, there we go. That's true. Well, do let us know what you think. Have you been asked to resign? Do tell us why and how what you learned from it if you did. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news now, and here to take you there is Phil Collins with Another Day in Paradise, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Name For You by The Shins, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wong Xiaoning and Noelle Lim. Now, The Straits Times has published an article, and this was published yesterday, with our very favourite person just emblazoned across the top of the article, because this is a piece about Jolo, who spoke to The Straits Times, breaking a long silence.
Via email, just to
say that he was just an intermediary in the 1MDB scandal. And this, of course, has sparked quite a lot of resulting articles and opinions over the past day or so, with all of the other media picking up the story.
So The Age has written, in response to that interview with Straits Times Singapore, The Age has written a very biting piece. In fact, it did, the tone was quite personal, I felt. But anyway, Jolo is really my favourite man. Everyone on trial is really passing the blame to him. So we really hope that he will come back soon. I think the question is, where is he? Speculation, he's in China. When will China release him? Then I think maybe when it's strategically convenient. And when will he be back to face the music? When maybe he strikes an appropriate deal with the Malaysian government on how to take this 1MDB trial further?
Yeah, but it's really, I don't know, it's... It seems to me, you know, very easy for him to just send out an email to say, oh, I'm just an intermediary, you know, it's not me, I just wash my hands off the whole thing. And then, of course, our PM also said the same thing. So who's really in charge of the whole episode of 1MDB? I mean, the money then didn't just disappear into, like, thin air, right? I mean, it was honestly a very clever, well-thought-out plan to take money from this 1MDB. It wasn't something that happened just by chance. And I like the fact that both of them say they have no clue what's happening.
Yeah, so it's everyone's pointing the fingers at everyone else right now. And what I will give to the Edge article is that it does make the point of, hey, look, if you know you maintain your innocence so strongly and you maintain that you're only an intermediary, come back and face the music. Or if you don't believe that you'll get a fair trial here, face the music in the US where you are also facing charges. But the important thing is go to trial and... tell your story to the world and open yourself up to questioning. What I didn't like about the Edge article was exactly what you said, the fact that it was very personal. And it said something along the lines of, I think in the last paragraph, you know, stop this nonsense or stop this spin aided by your friends in the ST. I thought that was uncalled for.
But I think Tom Wright, who is the Billion Dollar Whale author, also weighed into this, and he just basically said, it's a pointless interview to the Straits Times when you're not answering multiple charges. So the point is, like, you know, it's easy for you to come and say, I'm innocent, but then at the end of the day, you don't want to face the music.
He wants to tell the story only on his terms, because then he can control the narrative. That's what it. That's what it feels like. That's why he. You can. He's only going to one paper and not to a legal defense system where people will actually cross-examine you and provide witnesses maybe to contradict your story. So this is the difficulty, I think, that we're facing now, that this is not going to end until someone actually finds Jolo or he's extradited back to Malaysia. But that doesn't look like it's going to be the case, because he says that he's been offered political asylum.
I really wonder which country is offering him this asylum.
Yes, I'm sure there will be some takers. I think the point is, although Tom says it's a meaningless article, I'm sure it was a very well-read article. Indeed, it was a very clickbaity kind of story, right? So I think the question is, what deal will he pursue with the Malaysian government? I think then it depends how the Malaysian government wants to strategize this. Do they care about justice and truth and just getting everyone into jail? Or is it about really pinning it all down onto Najib and maybe killing off UMNO for once and for all, or at least sending out that right signal that we don't stand for corruption.
But to me, I mean, is it a good idea to even give a deal? I mean, you think about it, right? Are you making pacts with the devil in a way? I mean, then what is the point of a judiciary or a justice system, right? Because everyone is equal in the eyes of the law. So, you know, if you're poor, you wouldn't get this kind of arrangement, or if you were nobody. But because you're Jolo and you supposedly have a whole bag of secrets that everybody wants access to, then you have some negotiation. Doesn't seem very fair, right? Where's the whole idea of the equitable part of law?
Yeah, so I think the Malaysian government, not only the judiciary part they need to take care, I think it's really the PR war that they must win on this one.
I think it is. It does come down to the PR war, because, you know, this kind of deal making, it does happen. You know, you make deals with smaller criminals to catch bigger ones. But the problem is, you know, where does Jolo fall in the grand scheme of the 1MDB scandal? You know, is he just an intermediary, like he says, or was he equally culpable for some of the wrongdoing that we saw perpetrated? You know, so it'll be a difficult situation to decide whether or not to give him a deal, if that is on the table, of course, because it's a hypothetical right now. Because if you give him a deal, will you be essentially letting the bigger fish free, or will you be, you know, so I don't envy the people who will be having to make this decision, basically.
Yeah, so he says he's an intermediary, and I have to say he's a very willing intermediary. Yeah. It's not like he does not know what's going on, right? He's highly educated. He's, you know, experienced in this sort of things. And so really, you are a willing party to this. And that, what the Edge says, makes you part of the whole system. I know, in short, saying you are a criminal.
Well, you enjoyed the funds from 1MDB, right? I mean, certain assets are linked to him, like the super yacht. The $200 million yacht, which you used to sail around the world. Where'd that money come from, for example?
Absolutely. A lot of questions still remaining, and Jolo still remaining the enigmatic figure over it all. But do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on a few messages, and then we'll be taking a look at what the papers say this morning. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was There She Goes Again by Rem, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Shouning and Noel. Now, this morning we are taking a look at the front pages of the newspapers, and The Star has gone with "Make the culprits pay dearly for this." Now, the subheading here is "Water disruptions are a nationwide problem, but penalties for polluting the raw water sources are mere slaps on the wrist." So there are calls now for stiffer fines as well as jail terms to be instituted, which I don't think is a bad idea.
No, rightly so.
Absolutely.
Because the impact is so great, right? I mean, when people have their water disrupted, it really affects their daily lives, and it's a major, major inconvenience. And there's also questions about water security, because we take for granted that our water is safe to drink and use. And if you think about it, it seemed very easy that this water became suddenly polluted.
And I find it an irony, right? When I was living in Singapore for about 2.5 to 3 years, and there was never a water cut there in Singapore. It seems like it's so well maintained, the whole system. So I just find it, like, you know, it's so strange that Malaysia just cannot get its act together on this.
we have so many issues, one of which is we have high water wastage. So actually for every like 1 liter of water that we, you know, we use, 50% of that is usually just wasted. And I think it's also a function, I mean, of course, maintenance is one thing, the pipes are another thing. It's, I don't know, sometimes do you think we our water rates are, and I'll probably be crucified for this, but our water rates are also very cheap.
So yes, people, I was just going to say
people
that.
People don't appreciate it, you know, they don't think of it as a natural resource to kind of be careful and mindful and, about. You just take it for granted.
Yeah, and maybe we should increase water rates in order to kind of send home, send this message back that do take care of your water resources. And just looking at NST, I think the front page, escalating tensions between Iran and the US, they have a nice, really big picture here. I think thousands of people, Iranians, have taken to the streets. They have gone you know, to attend, to join the funeral procession of Qasem Soleimani, his funeral. So I think that's something to watch out for. It's been hogging the headlines. Page 2, page 3, the court rejects prosecution bid to impeach Najib and Shafi Abdullah. Najib's lawyer says that Jolo's claim of being victimized is rubbish. And this is what he says. And on the fourth page, Prime Minister Tun Mahathir is telling the civil servants to work harder in 2020, put personal feelings aside, make sure policies are executed.
Actually, speaking of Jolo, because we discussed this about 15 minutes ago, and we have had some social media responses. In response to the article that we asked, what do you make of Jolo's interview to the Straits Times over on Twitter? We had a reply saying it's a PR piece, that's all it is, more spin. But we also did have a WhatsApp from an anonymous number, so we don't know, it's an unsigned message. No deal with Jolo, let him live the runaway life. Living life like that wouldn't be fun, right? And I'm like, I guess not. But then, you know, it's also only possible for him to live this kind of runaway life because he has the money. It's a little bit like what we've been talking about with Carlos Ghosn, the fact that he was able to escape Japan. It's only possible because he had the funds to do so.
You can run, but what a life that would be, right? I mean, he has a child. The child needs to go to school. It's not much of a life, isn't it?
Well, for some people, that's preferable than sitting in a jail, right? And like what Lynn says, like, you know, money does make it a little bit easier. It's not so fun if you were poor, but if you are, you know, you have some access to capital, you can actually be relatively comfortable. It's just a question of what you look, what how you feel when you look yourself in the mirror. That's the big question for me. And in terms of the Financial Daily, The Edge, the front page is the ex-Post Malaysia CEO Muhammad Shukri takes over as acting MAHB chief. So the question is, all eyes will be on their share price today. And this is something we're going to discuss at the 7 to 8 hour. Now, the other news is the Malaysian Reserve. The headline is higher costs to implement Bank Negara's strict compliance rulings, because now all reporting institutions have to invest in compliant resources, including having compliance officers at branches. No longer just a HQ thing, but across the board, apparently.
Oh, they're really tightening the screws on the banks, isn't it?
Yeah, which is positive. I think there's always been questions about our anti-money laundering, tax evasion, knowing who the beneficiaries are in a company. I mean, this is all part of that drive towards it.
I have to mention a recent experience I had. I was trying to transfer money to UK to pay a vendor for some services. I was using a fintech platform, and the amount was about 4,000 ringgit. And the response I got, the document that I needed to submit to this fintech company for their compliance is my salary slip.
Oh, because they need to know whether you could actually make this 4,000 or whether you're actually sending it on behalf of somebody else.
Yeah, so if I use that platform to send this kind of money, I have to produce a salary slip. But I haven't tried it with a mainstream bank, whether I would likewise have to produce such a document.
Well, maybe the online platform has a different KYC, you know, your client rule versus the bank, who can actually see all your deposits every month. So it already tracks your ins and outs of your account. But I think that's going to be the norm going forward.
Yeah, so interesting to see how this will develop. Right now, we are heading into the 7 o'clock news, though. And after that, we'll be bringing you the business end of the morning run with lots more fascinating stories and discussions. So be sure to stay tuned for that after the news. In the meantime, here's Revelry by Kings of Leon, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.